This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Welcome to Books Uncovered, an exciting conversation about books and literary events, brought to you by the Dunedin Athenaeum Library and Mechanics Institute.
I'm Holly.
And I'm Bella.
Over the next half hour, we'll dive into themes ranging from romance to quirky book blurbs, all discovered within the depths of the Athenaeum Library. Kia ora, welcome to another show. Thanks for tuning in.
Kia ora, everyone.
It's a big weekend this weekend.
It's a huge weekend this weekend. There's a lot on.
It's classic Dunedin, eh? It's like nothing happens for ages and then it all happens in the same week or the same weekend.
Yeah. So you'll be listening to this in the midst beginning of the Dunedin Writers and Readers Festival.
Yeah. So it starts on Friday and then it goes all Saturday.
Sunday.
And Sunday, yeah. Yeah. Are you going to a few things?
I can't. I'm working, so I'll be in the bookshop.
Just sad.
I'm going to try and go to the Go Tell Your Racist Joke Somewhere Else, the poetry reading at Wolf on Saturday.
That looks good.
But yeah, sadly. And I'm going. We're both going to the Landfall
Symposium. Yes.
On yesterday.
on Friday, it will be really good because it's their 250th edition, which is really exciting. For them. Today we're going to be talking about transformation. So I think, a lot of books could fall into this category.
Yeah. I love books that deal with transformation in many different forms. It's a really interesting way to explore lots of different themes.
Yeah, it's kind of like a coming of age, like Buildings or a Man. I think the most famous book would be Metamorphosis, Franz Kafka.
Yeah, which I haven't read yet, but I need
to. Haven't you?
No.
Oh, wow. Oh, it's something to look forward to.
Yeah.
So many people have, done their own sort of variation of that that story. And it's actually quite a slim, it's like a novella sized, I think.
Yeah, it's on my list of I want to read in the coming months, I want to read more classics. So
it's a good to do that because it kind of builds the foundation and it makes you realize how many people pull from that canon as well.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely need to I need to revisit 1984.
Me too. I do want to read that again, although I'm a bit nervous too, just because.
Yeah.
Very prescient. And I've never read Fahrenheit.
No, neither have I.
Is it 411? 451.
451. Which is being banned at the moment in America.
Yeah, which is
why you want to read it.
Yeah. And just one that I should have read before.
I think it's just one of those things that's like you could just slips past the radar sometimes.
Mm.
So, who have you brought in to talk about today?
My first book that I want to talk about today is called The Hounding. It's by Zenobi Purvis, who is an English writer. She read English literature at the University of Oxford and has an MA in creative writing from Royal Holloway. And this is her debut novel. I've heard about this novel through actually Sarai De Silva's Instagram story. She wrote Arma, which I've talked about on the show. And so I trusted her judgment that I should give this one a go. And this one, it really got under my skin in a really good way. It's very eerie, it's atmospheric, and it's quietly devastating. So it's set in 18th century Oxfordshire and it follows five sisters in the sleepy village of Little Nettlebed who are rumoured to be transforming into dogs. There's the theme. but what it's really about runs much deeper. It's about fear, suspicion and how tightly knit communities can turn feral when faced with the unfamiliar. So Purvis actually grew the idea from this novel when she came across this true story of five sisters in 1700 who were said to be seized with frequent barking in the manner of dogs.
Amazing.
Mood. And she wanted to know what had happened to the girls and to imagine how the community might have responded to this strange phenomenon in its midst. And so the story grew as an imaginative response to that situation. This was billed as The Crucible Meets The Virgin Suicides by the publisher, which I think is apt. It also reminded me a lot of The Lottery by my girl Shirley Jackson, with that creeping small-town dread and the sense of claustrophobia as a village sort of slowly folds in on itself, which is in the best Gothic tradition. It's a really subtle kind of horror not just in what might be happening to the sisters, but in how everyone around them responds. I think Purvis's prose is really stunning. It's lush, sharp-edged, and often unsettling, and there's a real simmering anger beneath the surface that feels really modern despite the historical setting. Yeah, there's a really haunting ambiguity in it. And this is, it's very reminiscent of the Virgin Suicides in atmosphere and in the way the story is told. So it's told through the perspectives of four men, the sister's grandfather, two farmhands, and a very violently misogynistic ferryman who starts the rumour about them turning into dogs. And one woman, Temperance, the local pub owner's wife. So the result is a really refracted view of the five girls seen by five curious outsiders who each learn something about themselves as they watch. It really transforms them into something more symbolic than human, and they ultimately get consumed by the narratives projected onto them. Wow. So yeah, I really enjoyed it. My one criticism was that I think she does sort of tell instead of just showing. It's, you can kind of tell by the title that it's the hounding, which refers to the girls turning into dogs, and also their neighbours taking up the hunt. That sort of shows that it's not a novel that's particularly interested in nuance. It really wants to directly engage with the subject of femininity being seen as a menace and a vessel to like these unchanneling, unnatural forces. But I did find that sometimes she was a bit too blatant on hammering home those themes, and it could have done with a bit of reining back. There's an example of this is a scene where it's a really grotesque scene where six young pregnant women are forced to carry the coffin of another villager who has died in childbirth as a reminder of the fate that might await them. And this is something that really happened. So she based this on historical fact. And the scene is really powerful and visceral, but I did find it got ruined a bit because at the end, Temperance, the pub owner's wife, is muses that this is the great grueling trial of being a woman in a world governed by men. I just feel like you don't need to say it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's too on the nose, isn't it?
Yeah, so that was my criticism. But overall, I really enjoyed it. It's a really interesting meditation on how society treats women who won't conform and how easily they get turned into monsters. So I do really recommend it.
Yeah, it sounds like a really interesting topic.
And yeah.
Yeah, setting as well.
Yeah, I'll end with a quote by one of the sisters, Anne. She says, "We went out when we weren't supposed to. We were too free. And this, all of this, is our punishment. It has nothing to do with the idea of us becoming dogs and everything to do with the fact of us being girls."
Hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome. And remind us, what's that?
So that is The Hounding by Zenobi Purvis.
Zenobi.
Yeah, it's spelled X-E-N-O-B-E.
Oh, yeah. Brilliant. Yeah. Cool. I have to keep an eye out for that one.
Yeah. What did you read?
Well, you know, it's hard because you recommend books, Bella, and then I read them, and then they've already been talked about because I've been reading Hawa Akbar, The Martyr, yes, at the moment, and just really, really enjoying it.
I am so happy you like it.
If you, yeah, the listeners, if you get the option, well, you know, you can get it out at the Athenaeum, which is who sponsors this show. Yeah, fantastic book. But anyway, we're not here to talk about him. I'm here to talk about Catherine Chidji, The Book of Guilt, which I guess a lot of people will be familiar with, and she's part of the Dunedin Writers and Readers Festival this year. I had a wee look up before, I think. By the time this show airs, she actually had her talk this morning.
Oh, okay.
On Saturday morning. So I hope it was wonderful. Hope it went well. So, yeah, she's born in the 70s and she's got 9 novels. And I always do that. I always go on about who the author is first before the story.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, I find it quite interesting, and I guess it goes against that like death of the author thing, like reading a text where you just don't consider the author at all. Mm. You know how they say you can't read Sylvia Plath without knowing her story, because we all know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, Catherine Chidji, she is one of those people that studied the MA, creative writing, up at Victoria University in 1997. So yeah, she's, this book, The Book of Guilt, she's employed the voice of a child as her primary protagonist, actually 2 children, which is a technique she's previously explored with Pet. And it's quite a challenging and bold approach to storytelling, I find, because it can either be really compelling and convey that kind of innocent childlike perception of the world, or it can just kind of hit a bit flat and feel forced. But she handles this with quite, with nuance and skill. So the story is set in a skewered version of England in 1979, and it follows thirteen-year-old triplets, Vincent, Lawrence, and William, and they're the last remaining residents of a home scheme run by the government. But the government's changing, and the scheme is getting shut down. And so the question of what to do with the remaining children and how to integrate them into society becomes sort of the main theme. And there's kind of this feeling of unease because you're not quite sure who these children are. Mm. So as a reader, you're already mulling up all these ideas of, you know, are they clones or, this and that. Mm. So it sort of reads like a BBC drama set in the 70s. I can imagine it being in that kind of vein. There's a sort of, I guess the transformation is the slow realization of who they are, and that transforms their life. So the main protagonist is Vincent. So all three brothers have quite different personalities, and then paralleling, each chapter's in Vincent's voice, and then there's another one, I forget what the young girl's called, but she lives with her parents and she's not allowed outside.
Mm.
And you're not quite sure why. It all comes together quite nicely at the end. But it was a really good read. I do feel like I'm kind of done reading her work now, like having tasted these two novels.
Yeah.
That it's just, it was good. And it brings up topics of fascism and this sort of thing.
I'm very intrigued about what.
Yeah. I don't want to say too much about it without giving it away. But so the boys have their mothers. There's the morning mother and the afternoon and the evening mother.
Mm.
And they've been with them their whole life. And so they live in this huge house and they're taken care of. So it's very seeped in sort of mystery and
kind
the British countryside.
Reminds me a bit of Never Let Me Go by Kazuo Ishiguro.
Oh, I don't think I've seen that.
It's kind of similar, this group of people. Yeah.
I know it's a film too, right?
It is a good film as well. This group of people that you're not sure what their purpose is or why we talk.
Yeah, this was definitely a page turner, it's very easy read, and the young boy Vincent's a really likable character, and you're sort of, championing him along as he discovers who he is and then who he becomes.
Mm.
And it's really interesting how it twists at the end. Yeah, definitely, I recommend it.
Okay, I do want to read it. I've heard, your good review and the multiple good ones. I am always a bit skeptical about books in children's point of view. But I did like Pet, and there are a few that I have enjoyed. I like Room by Emma Donoghue, that sort of thing.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it can kind of, it's definitely not my chosen. I wouldn't necessarily want to read a child's perspective.
Yeah.
As my opinion.
It's children's perspective and animals' perspective, which Tudy's also done with the X-Men's Carnival.
Yes, that's right.
Which I do need to try.
And some people feel very strongly for or against her as well.
Mm.
But she's won numerous awards, and she's a very strong writer, and it's no surprise that she's doing well. She's got a really good imagination and execution.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Another good review. I have another good review.
Excellent. They're all good reviews.
They're all good reviews. No scathing criticisms, only some mild ones. The second book I've read recently about transformation was, it's called We Love You, Bunny by Mona Awad. And this is actually, a sequel, prequel, companion novel to her cult classic book, Bunny, which was released in 2019. So you might have heard of that one. But if you haven't, Bunny is a surreal, hallucinogenic novel set on a prestigious creative writing MFA program. It's narrated by Samantha, who's an acerbic writer of dark fiction, and it centres around a clique of students whose corny obsessions, internet hairbraiding tutorials, vintage typewriters and tiny baked goods belie their true demonic natures. Behind the scenes, the bunnies, these girls, are magically creating hunky man-bunny hybrids they call drafts. And these darlings eventually have to be killed, literally, with axes. So that's the first novel, Bunny, which I did really enjoy. I loved how gleefully vicious the campus satire was and just the absurdity of the whole thing. And I have to say, I went into this expecting to not enjoy it. I felt like it was a book that didn't need to be written, and I was confused about why she had done this. And I read some interviews with Mona Awad where she said herself that she was very nervous to return to the Bunnyverse.
I love that, like, a book that didn't need to be written.
That could be, like, the worst review.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, I'll go on. She did say herself that she was very nervous to return to the Bunnyverse because of how much readers loved and connected with the first one, and they had a lot of people have very personal relationships with the book, which has, there's lots of theories about, like, what it really means, like, you know, that sort of thing. There's lots of Reddit threads about it. But that she wanted to revisit it because writing the first book was such a transformative experience, as it was her first foray into surrealism and fantasy. And she says that it was where she really first discovered a way of telling stories that was exciting to her. So after I read that, I was like, oh, I understand why she's wanted to, like, return to this one. So We Love You, Bunny begins with Samantha, the narrator of the first novel, and she's bound and gagged in an attic. She's just published her first novel, which is Bunny, the prequel, to critical acclaim, but at a New England stop on her book tour, her one-time frenemies, furious at the way they've been portrayed, kidnap her to tell their side of the story. And they're passing around an axe like a talking stick, introducing us to their four versions of their bunny-centric world. And then they pass the mic to a special guest who is the first bunny man that the bunnies created, so I'm saying bunny a lot, named Arius. And this is his point of view is where I think the novel really shines. His chapters make really playful references to Frankenstein, Jane Eyre, and the Velveteen Rabbit. And he's prone to rhapsodizing in breathless fragments. The hum of grasses, the moon casting her slivery light on my face. Arius felt alive. And Awad uses him to really mine the mystery of the creative process and explore the ethics around creation. She said in an interview that there is something about making art that's beautiful, but also a bit of violence. I was interested in capturing that hunger that we have to make. What's that about, and what's the cost of that? Arius is disgusted by writers and all their typing and scribbling and trying to take down the moon. I will say that We Love You, Bunny is quite a bit more fantastical and weird than Bunny was. So, blanket warning, if you didn't like Bunny, don't read this book. Like, obviously you're not going to enjoy it. Like, but if you did, like, definitely I recommend giving this one a go. I think that this could have done with some editing. It's nearly 500 pages,
oh, wow.
So it feels a bit bloated in parts. And I felt the metaphors for creativity were a bit more overdone than the original. But overall, I think this was a really delightfully dark and twisty follow-up that's every bit as fresh and creative as Bunny. I also didn't see the ending coming, and it really made me laugh. I laughed a lot while I was reading this book.
And it's funny just, ending.
Oh, just the book overall was funny, okay. Yeah. Just the satire is very clever. It's camp. So
yeah, okay.
If you love a camp novel.
And is it, so it'd be like in the fantasy fiction kind of genre?
More like sort of surreal. It's kind of what the genre that you would call like weird girl literature.
Oh, yeah.
That one.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely fantastical.
Yeah.
Also like a real skewering of dark academia and that whole genre. Yeah.
Interesting.
It's an interesting book. You'll either love it or like it, or you will hate it. Like,
oh, amazing.
But yeah, I do recommend it, especially if you liked Bunny.
Yeah, cool. Well, yeah, I was just going to talk about some of the books that we've got in at the Athenaeum Library last week.
Mm.
Because there's quite a few awesome ones. I haven't actually read this series, but the Richard Osman series. So we've got the latest one by him, The Impossible Fortune.
Mm. I've read the first one. It was really fun.
They're kind of cozy mysteries, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's like a bunch of old people solving crimes in their rest home.
Yeah, yeah. They've been very popular at the library. And then the other one is Ian McEwan, What We Can Know, which Bella was talking about last week.
Yes.
And The Land in Winter by Andrew Miller, which is shortlisted for the Booker Prize this year, and people are speculating that he's actually going to be the winner.
Okay.
It's actually been out since last year, this one.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know much else about it. The Hiding Places by Lindley Edmonds, which I've read, and we'll talk about it at some point, but that's a sort of meditation on early motherhood and creativity, told through a series of fragments that range from raw and troubled to delightful and hilarious. And she's using excerpts from family letters, medical records, and advice contained in the Truby King's 1930 tract, Feeding and Care of Baby. So it's all sort of written in fragments. It's a very easy book to go through. Like there's a quote on the back by someone saying, "Don't disturb me, I'm reading something really good.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to read that one.
Yeah, it's we'll talk about it another time, but Lindley's a bit of a powerhouse in Dunedin and afar, and And then the next one is Gravity Let Me Go by Trent Dalton, who I've never read.
Me neither.
Australian writer.
I just have never been drawn to what they're about, but people love them.
Yeah. What's his famous one?
Boy
Swallows Universe.
Boy Swallows Universe, and then there's All Our Shimmering Tomorrows, Stars.
Yes, that's it. Moving on, we also got Strange Pictures by Uketsu, which is the first in a series of crime books by a Japanese writer, and it has the pictures in it. And so
almost like the house plans, and then you kind of can solve it based on the pictures and things.
Yeah, so the first picture is the house, and it's like, why is there something off about this house? Mm. Apparently it's amazing.
Okay, I do really want to read those ones.
Yeah, it's been very popular. William Boyd's next one in his series called The Predicament, so that's the follow-on from Gabriel's Moon, which is a spy espionage type story, very masculine, smoking man in London in the 1960s. But yeah, a very excellent writer. The Vanishing Place by Zoe Rankin. So she's a New Zealand writer. She's born in Scotland. This is her debut novel, sort of set in Haast in the West Coast. And it's a woman sort of appears out of the forest covered in blood.
It's like a crime thriller one.
Yes. Ooh. Yeah. So apparently it's Cold Harbour Press, maybe? No, Moa Press.
Oh, yeah.
Published it just based on 4,000 words, and they were like, yep, this is going to be great. And then the last one is We Do Not Part by Han Kang.
Oh, yes.
Have you read that?
I haven't, but I've read The Vegetarian.
Yes. Right,
which you've talked about on this.
Yeah.
But my coworkers at the bookshop really liked it. It's a hard read, but...
A hard one.
It's the themes are very dark, which if you've read The Vegetarian, you probably won't be surprised by.
Yeah. But. Yeah, that's right. But I enjoyed The Vegetarian. I thought it was really good. Obviously there's a lot of events happening in Utihoti this weekend. And it is also the Southern Heritage Festival for the whole month of October. And the Athenaeum is going to be having an event on the 28th, which is a Tuesday, I believe. At 5:30, Hocken archivist Tom Riley is going to be giving a presentation on the history of the Octagon and the Athenaeum, sort of in those early days in the 1870s. It will be similar to what he presented at our anniversary in May. So if you caught that, it was really good. Lots of visual aid that he's dug up from the Hocken.
That was so cool.
Yeah.
I love seeing the old theatres and things.
Yeah.
It's in the Octagon. I'm like, oh.
Pretty amazing just how much it's transformed. Like there used to be an archway in the Octagon. And
the Star Fountain. Oh, bring that back.
Yeah. There used to be more fountains in the Octagon, didn't there? That's on the 28th. And there's lots of other awesome things. You can obviously find that information on their website. I guess that's us for the weekend.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah, cheers. Have a wonderful writing, reading, literary weekend.
Bye. You have been listening to Books Uncovered, brought to you by the Dunedin Athenaeum Library and Mechanics Institute.
For more information about hosting events or becoming a member of the Athenaeum Library, please visit our website, dunedinathenaeum.org.nz, or come in and visit us in the Lower Octagon. Our opening hours are Tuesday to Wednesdays, 10 a.m. till 2 p.m. and Thursdays, 2 p.m. till 6 p.m.
To listen again to this episode or to find other podcasts in the series, look for Books Uncovered on oar.org.nz or your favourite podcast platform.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.